Hello, everybody. For those who attended earlier webinars in this series, you might remember that on earlier occasions we've asked some of the participants to present, to deliver formal presentations based on their experiences and their work. This time we're trying a somewhat different format. The continuous learning also applies to us in terms of trying to figure out how best to organize webinars like this. So we suggest a different format for this webinar. And as Thierry alluded, mentioned at the beginning, I'll ask a few questions to the two panelists, Vuti and Tom. And they are questions that are meant to get the ball rolling, really. And then I will open up the discussion so that you can all chip in, not only with your own questions, but also with your comments and contributions. Many of you may well have very good experiences with the use of grievance mechanisms, so we're very keen to hear from your experiences as well. And also, while during the initial questions and answers just now, please feel free to use the chat box that you have in the bottom right corner of the interface, so that Thierry can take note of them, and we can then bounce back some of the comments or questions you will type in during the discussion. We have Tom and Vuti that are both online. You have the photos of the two panelists in on the interface, so you can see who they are. I start by asking the first question, the first of three. And the first question is perhaps a way of introducing the issue, and so I would like to ask Tom and Vuti to say a few words about the problem they were facing and the mechanism they decided to use to tackle that problem and why they chose that mechanism. So, Vuti, would you like to start to tell us a bit about the problem and the mechanisms used in 4 or 5 minutes, please? Muti, are you on the line?
Hello?
Yes, now you are.
Hello?
Yes, Muti, we can hear you.
Okay, sorry. Yeah, this is my first time to join this call, and apologize for being late. I'm trying to figure it out how to use these systems. I feel it's very complicated, but really, really amazing how we can use these kind of technologies to communicate with each other. So again, my name's Ingo Tees. I work for the local organization, the Cambodian local organization called Equitable Cambodia. And currently, we are supporting the indigenous community in the northern part of the countries that are affecting the by the rubber plantations owned by the Vietnamese company called Hagold. And these concessions are affected many communities. So far, we confirmed that at least 18 community have been affected, and more than about 2,000 families across these two districts and the 8 villages, and all of them are indigenous communities. And the Vietnamese company actually they receive loan from the Vietnamese banks called Dragon Capital, and the Vietnamese banks also got money from the IFC through the intermediary funds or loan. And after we spent many years in the past few years trying to work with the local authority and the company, but people still cannot find the solution. So that's why we started our research and investigation into the case last year, late last year, and we found that the World Bank, the IFC, implicated in this case, and we started to share these information with the indigenous communities and with others NGO partner to inform them about the options that they can use to make the company accountable to their situation. And so, and we early this years after we done our initial research, and we submit the complaint to the CAO in February 10, 2014, and on behalf of the affected communities, after they request us to represent them on this process. And we and others NGO, the indigenous organizations and other NGO, we represent them in this case, and we filed the complaint to the CAO, and CAO already accepted the complaints, and they already conducted the assessment to the case. And now we are at the stage where everyone will come up and discuss the solution. So we expect probably in January. Now we are working on the ground rule, and the company already agrees that they will join the negotiations in January this year. So that's the update of the case. Hello?
Thank you, Woody, for that background to the case. And so we heard about the rubber plantation in Cambodia and the issues it raised, particularly in terms of loss of land, but also the leveraging of the involvement of one particular lender, the IFC, and the opportunity provided to submit a complaint to the IFC CAO. And we will hear more about this particular case in a minute. But I would like now to go to move to Tom. And ask you, Tom, the same question, which is what sort of problem were you facing, and what mechanism do you use, and why in your own context? Tom, you need to unmute the microphone, in order to be heard.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hello, my name is Tom Lomax. I'm a lawyer at the Forest Peoples Programme. And as Lorenzo and Emily have said, I'll be talking about the RSPO complaints panel process, which we've been involved in supporting communities and local civil society organisations to access in several different contexts. The ones I've been most involved in have been in Liberia, but Forest Peoples Programme has been involved in other complaints For example, in Indonesia as well. Essentially, the problem in most places has been the same: communities losing land, and therefore their livelihoods to palm oil companies using that land. The disputes that the communities were raising were normally that their lands were being taken and their forests cleared without their free prior informed consent. There was often grievances such as the destruction of grave sites or sacred forest areas, damage and pollution to water sources, and of course the loss of fields, crops, etc., without proper consultation or compensation. So that was the problem. The immediate concern of most of those communities was to stop further loss of the land and the destruction of their forests and wetland areas as quickly as possible. And their major request was that the company would come and sit with them and take their grievances seriously and to come up with a solution, a more long-term solution. So among those community members, I think there was a variety of what their expectations were of any mechanism that they would use, but many hoped to get land back because they literally had nothing left to farm on. Some wanted to come to some kind of accommodation with the company about the land use, so for example, that the community could rent the land to the company. Some hope to get a better development benefits profit sharing arrangement, so more or better jobs, better compensation, schools, clinics, etc. And many wanted a mixture of those. So they decided to, communities decided to use the RSPO complaints panel process, often under the RSPO's new plantings procedure. The NPP. I don't know if people have heard of that procedure, but essentially it requires companies who intend to start new plantings to do a minimum disclosure on the RSPO website of, for example, the environmental and social impact assessment and the high conservation value assessments, both of which are intended to identify social and environmental risks. And they should have been conducted in a fully participatory way under the RSPO standard. So summaries of both those documents are placed on the RSPO website, and the public is invited to give any feedback on that proposed new planting within 30 days. So communities have a very short time to respond. But if they do respond, and if there are serious problems, then re a response at that moment in time can result in the company being asked to stop any further development while those complaints are resolved. So it's a very key moment, an important opportunity. Why did they decide to use the RSPO complaints panel process? Well, that was often due to a lack of any faith in their own judicial systems and in the abilities of their government representatives to do anything to help them. So there were, in most cases that I know of, or no other judicial or non-judicial option open to them. I think it was also certainly felt by support organisations that the companies would be responsive because they would be fearful of the reputational damage that they would suffer, the bad press, but also about compromising their own access to the markets for certified sustainable palm oil, which is a big market. Maybe you know already, but many of the large volume buyers of palm oil have sustainable palm oil purchasing policies. So if you want a big buyer like Unilever or Nestlé or whoever, you need to be RSPO certified, preferably. So those are the reasons why they decided to pursue the RSPO complaints panel process. And the various complaints that have been made are at various different stages. But my comments in answering this question and in the others will call on those various different examples. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Tom, for that contribution. And it seems to me already there are parallels emerging between the two cases. The impact of large-scale plantations, not only in terms of loss of land and therefore livelihoods, but also this concern of communities to have the grievances taken seriously by companies, and how does one get a company to engage with those grievances in a context in which formal redress mechanisms and court systems may be inaccessible and not trusted by the public. So two different experiences, one involving a lender and the other involving a certification body. I like now to ask the second question, which is what practical steps did you follow, and what are your main tips for those who may want to use these mechanisms in future? So very much about the practical steps that have been taken in these two experiences to get to the point of bringing the complaint to either the lender or the certification body. I like to start with Wuti, if possible. If you could tell us how you went about filing the complaint and managing the process in relation to the IFC and the top tips you may have for participants.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, in this particular case, when we was approached by the community, and then we started to look into the case and try to map out who are the actors involved in this case, and we will also look at the legal issue and also the policy of the. After we found out who is involved, and we looked if they are really follow the own policy, and then we also have to do the impact study on the grounds, try to gather all evidence what happened on the grounds, and then we have to come back and explain to the communities affected, and especially the representatives. To explain to them to make them understand about the process and the issue that they are facing, and then we will also discuss what kind of the solution that they are that they want to reach, and then after we get all of this, then the process, because community can also file their own complaint, but we in this particular case, community are very lack of understanding about the process, and they have little knowledge about the process, and also the environments on the ground, the intimidations and the security is also very important for them, and also the languages. In our case, people, indigenous people, they speak four different languages, and so we have to understand all of this issue, and then we ask if they want to us to be their representatives and to bring these complaints to the IFC CEO. And then in our case, people understood after we provide a long discussions and consultations with them, and we explain them the role of each actor, including the IFC. And we cannot make them expect that the solution will be reached immediately. We have to tell them about the pros and cons of this case, and the lengths and the complexities of this process, so people understand. And then we have to also understand, because in our situations, like I raised, I mentioned earlier, the language is a big issue. So we don't speak the language. So we work with the NGO, the indigenous NGO, that's also dealing with different groups of indigenous, and they can't speak the whole language. So we need to really get the people to work with us so that they can communicate with the people. So and also what we are facing at the moment, the government is also also a local authority is a big obstacle for us. And when we try to organize meeting, when we try to do work on the ground, and they're the one that really interfere in our work. So you have to, in this situation, if this happens, you need to communicate with the IFC and to ensure that the government cooperates with us and ensure that we can move, we can work in a pre and transparent process. And also the company need to show their good faith in using this process. Otherwise, you spend a lot of resources after you file the complaints, and then your complaint is accepted, but all party do not have a good faith in joining this process, then you can't get anywhere. So yeah, in our case, we're able to through the World Bank's interventions, because in other case the World Bank also implicated in that case. So the World Bank also try, and IFC try to work with the government through the Ministry of Interior, and then they issue the letters to the governors, instructed them to cooperate with the NGO people and CEO to work together to find the solution. And also to show the good faith, we need to ask the company also to stop, the clearance or the cutting activity on the indigenous land and forest. And so, in our case, the company also issued the letter saying that we will not do any clearance or logging during this period of time, and we will also join this process and try to find the solution. That I think we are for this process. At the moment, I think it's moving very well, and we hope that we can come up with some solution. But another important thing that you need to be aware of is the NGO working approach. Because in this particular case, and we experienced in other cases as well, NGO, they have different way of working, different approach. So NGO need to work together. Otherwise, you also making problem for the people, and you are also making problem for this process. So that's my kind of advice and tips to this mechanism. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Woody, for that. Very clear and very insightful. I'd like to ask the same question to Tom. So the question again is, what are the practical steps that you followed, and what are the top tips that you would share with those who might want to use the same mechanism in future? And here we're talking about the RSPO agreement mechanism in particular.
Hello again. Similar to what Ruthie was saying, the role of the civil society organizations was a crucial one, because communities were not aware of the existence of the RSPO mechanism. They did not know what the standards were of the RSPO or what grievance process was in place. And the other role in which the civil society organizations was crucial was the sense in which they could effectively manage those questions of representation and legitimacy, and in effect try to model a free, prior, informed consent process in how they might relate to the communities and in how the complaint is pursued, which is in essence also a community capacity issue. If you're doing that properly, you're raising their expectations of what they should be able to expect of other institutions, such as the companies and the governments. So the first step in that process, of course, is consulting with as many people as possible from cross sections of the communities, what their priorities are, what the local actors are, and to sharing information as well on the RSPO itself. They may not even know, if the concession hasn't started, the communities may not even know that their land has already been leased to a company by the government. Alongside the social standard of the RSPO, what they could reasonably expect from using any complaints and grievance procedure, what the risks and benefits might be to them, and also what other options there might be, so that they can compare it to those. So even if there are no other judicial or non-judicial grievance mechanisms open to them, there may be other tools that they can use, like the media, using their local representatives in government, relationships with international organizations and campaigners, contacting company investors, as well as obviously legal action if that's possible. But obviously central to all of those discussions about what the community could do about their problem, was that it was their decision. Ensuring communities in the driving seat for that complaint, to be able to make a fully informed decision on what to do, and to choose their own representatives was a key point. The importance of that process is also illustrated by the fact that communities who do complain will run the risk of a backlash, and that could have personal risks for community members. So they run the risks, and therefore they have to be in the driving seat. As I say, so the how communities want to make their decision, whether they want to communicate via an NGO or themselves or a lawyer, or how they want to conduct discussions with the companies or local government is up to them. And there were, in terms of tips, there are some common pitfalls. For example, there are customary institutions, for example, the paramount chiefs, for example, that are often the first port of call for companies, for example, when they are consulting communities. But sometimes those customary institutions have been already co-opted by government and subject to pressure. They may be paid by government, and they may sometimes be dismissed by government if they don't do what if they don't follow the will of the government. So they don't often necessarily represent the communities or are unable to do so. So a wider participatory process is needed. One example from one particular complaint, which is particularly good, I think, was where the civil society organisation worked with the community, where there was about 10 communities, to decide how they wanted to communicate and how they wanted to pursue the complaint and represent themselves. And the community decided to nominate three representatives from each community. So they had a council which had over 30 people on it, and then they nominated a smaller group, I think of around 10, to be on a committee. The committee could hold meetings with the civil society supporters, their lawyers, the government, and the company, but they had to report back to the council to consult and for decision making. And for very important decisions and they had to report, they had to consult the whole community for those.